needing. You're setting the bait, well, you're needing. It's over now, it's over now.
Good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards. Today is Monday. Okay, I hope you're hearing me. Good afternoon, Richmond. We have been having a little bit of a technical difficulty, so I appreciate you bearing with us this morning. Today is Monday, and this is Defenders Live, and we are brought to you as a production of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And today, I am really pleased to have a guest to share some insights on the issues of, not issues, but actually the practice of writing and critical thinking. And just before I introduce you to our guest, I do want to let you know that you can learn more about the Defenders at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. My guest today is Mary Lamb Sheldon. She is an assistant professor at VCU in the Department of Focused Inquiry, which when I first heard about it, maybe 2 years ago, I thought was a completely fascinating department name. And so first, I should just say, welcome, Mary.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Great. And then you got to explain that. I mean, you know, we know about the Department of African American Studies. We know about the Department of History. We know about, you know, philosophy. What is focused inquiry?
Yeah, it's a good question. Focused inquiry is, it is a kind of, well, it's a name that's designed to kind of suggest the activities that are taking place in the classroom where we're teaching. It replaces a single semester of composition, required composition, with two required semesters of critical thinking, ethical reasoning, research, and oral and written communication. And it's designed really to help our students really practice and implement a set of core skills that they're going to need throughout their university career and beyond into their professional lives.
Well, that just sounds, you know, like somebody suddenly got smart and said, these kids keep complaining. They go home and complain to their parents and their friends. Why do I have to know this? Why do I have to, you know, and we go into college and we're either given, you know, remedial English because we didn't quite get it in high school, or we go in and we have to take English all over again. And I think for a lot of kids, it was, you know, why do I have to keep doing this? And so now it sounds like you've actually put it into the proper context, why you do this literally, practically, pragmatically for your college career.
I hope so. This is one of the things that I hope we are saying to our students. One of the things that I wish had been said to me really more often when I was in college, that, you know, I think our students think about high school, have been taught to think about high school as a rehearsal for college. And when they get to college, they need some help thinking about college not as rehearsal for life, but as actually the first phase of their professional lives.
This is
an opportunity for you to put your skills that you are still acquiring into practice professionally, and really up those skills and distinguish yourself in a way that you can represent on a piece of paper that you might give to an employer, or that you might use to get a grant for your project or whatever.
Right. And it seems in a way that, you know, students are sort of come into college in a dual state of mind. You know, one, they're like, well, I'm grown now and I'm leaving home and I've made my decisions. And at the same time, probably a tremendous amount of uncertainty. Don't quite know what they're stepping into, don't quite know how their skills that they have gotten apply. And I've seen it I saw it in myself, I've seen it in others, where there's sort of this wrestling match between trying to exude confidence that you have some idea of what you're doing and what you want to do, and yet being open to being taught more, to understanding that you are still in process and everybody gets that, and that in fact, well, there are those who are going to be there to judge you and, you know, knock you down. But for the most part, you want to step into college assuming that everyone is at your disposal to help you meet those goals.
Right. And well, and to help you cultivate a different kind of confidence. You know, there's the kind of confidence that can produce a right answer.
Mm-hmm.
But the confidence to say, I don't know everything. I need to explore this a little further. I need to engage this topic more. I need to understand it better. That's a different kind of confidence altogether.
No, it really is. It really is. One of the things on, I'll just, you know, abjectly admit that one of my favorite television shows is Bones. and, you know, it's a forensic laboratory, and it's like all these big brain people who are constantly, you know, engaging their skill set. But one of the things that that you do notice in the dialogue is that it's very important to say I don't know when you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pretend because then you send people off. Goose chases, as we used to call them, but which is, you know, can be critically important at certain junctures.
Right.
So the confidence to say I don't know is sort of the surface layer of the abject need to be able to say I don't know in order that truth finding can take place.
Right, and that adventure can take place.
Oh,
right, because truth finding is an adventure.
Oh
right?
My God!
So,
yes.
Yeah.
External or internal.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Now, so what part of what spurred us getting together here today, and I want to sort of editorialize just a little bit, because I think my listeners are accustomed to this being a show that focuses on social justice issues. And so, you know, interlaced in all these 6 years that I've been doing this show, I've talked about the importance of critical thinking and the way that people absorb information and respond to issues that come up, because, of course, every other day things come up. And I'll mention there are two things happening as we speak. There is a rally downtown, a press conference and rally for a mother who is fighting for her autistic son who was wrongfully convicted of assault on a police officer because of two dynamics. One is the issue of racial profiling, mm-hmm. of young black men, and the second is the misunderstanding and ignorance around autism and mm-hmm. how that affects people's ability to interact with others in stressful circumstances. And then really the third piece of that would be how our criminal justice system handles that. Now that's three apparently really in a way disparate issues. And so how does the lay person sort of absorb all three of those things and come to the point at which they would decide to participate mm-hmm. in a rally and be vocal?
Mm-hmm.
That involves
critical thinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So you've been engaged in one. I guess this is one of the ways that you are introducing the topic to students. But tell us a little bit about the interview that you had me participate in, and the purpose for that for the students.
Sure. Well, it's really an internal piece of work. Some of the faculty have gotten together to interview community members about the skill set that we're trying to teach in focused inquiry and how it applies in professional life. So the whole point really is to have someone else tell them, right? Because we know sometimes the young people, or any people really, don't want to listen to that figure of authority, but might listen to somebody who is tied into something that they might want to do someday, right? Right. So, right. So we're just asking those folks, okay, how do you use critical thinking? How do you use mm-hmm. public speaking? How do you use oral communication when you're not speaking in mm-hmm. public? How does collaboration figure in your work?
Right, right. And of course, I immediately started talking about the radio show,
mm-hmm. yeah,
and the need for you to be on the radio show in order to put you on the spot as well and make you answer these questions.
Turnabout's so. Fair play. Right?
Yeah, because I think like a lot of people, any interview is, you know, can be challenging, especially if it's sort of a survey. And then suddenly you're like, oh, I don't remember. I don't know. And you're not used to, we're not used to sort of distilling, having thought about things in that kind of structured way and distilling it down to an answer that you can, you know, put between the double spacing of the, of the questionnaire. So, so we wanted to do a little bit of turnabout and give people an idea of what, how you are presenting information gathered in this interview and give them a sense of what that feels like. So mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll do all eight, but we'll give it a start.
Whatever you like. Yeah.
So the preface for the for this interview, for the question, is these questions can be altered or augmented as seem appropriate in the interview, but should be asked as a general structure. And you may want to introduce each question in your own way, but the big topics we want to hear about are writing, speaking, reading, critical thinking, and group work. So
group work is that catch-all teaching phrase for collaborative for collaborative work. Yeah,
right. Working, playing together nicely, playing together anyway. Yeah. So the first question is to describe your path to your present career, including your educational background.
I would describe my career path as meandering. I didn't know that I was going to be a college professor when I started out as an undergrad. I think that might be true for a lot of undergrads.
I don't think you think about it as a career path.
I think a few do, and often they're recognizable later. But I started as a vocal music major, actually. So that's pretty far from English professor, which is kind of the next closest thing to what I actually do now. I was a returning student. I took time after my BA to stay home with my daughter and to have a professional life and also to sing some professionally. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it was a Sunday school class that taught me that I could teach. Mm-hmm. Strangely, I have stage fright about public speaking, but not about singing, or less about singing. Singing gives you a text, right?
Right.
Public speaking, you create your own
or
work off the cuff, right?
Yeah.
So those two things were different enough that I really couldn't imagine, although English was always something I'd been good at, I couldn't really imagine standing up in front of a class and talking about a work of literature or student writing or
right,
any of that.
Right. So. Yeah, you would seem to have to be all knowledgeable and all.
Well, I hope not. No, I hope I don't seem all knowledgeable in my classroom. Actually, I hope I model investigation for my students.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see. There you go. And so question number...
And inquiry, right? Hence
and
the
inquiry.
Name.
Inquiry, yeah. Yes, so right. The next question then is, how do you use writing in your field?
Oh, well, I use writing all the time, every day, constantly. So in my teaching, I write everything from lesson plans to evaluation comments on a student paper. Mm-hmm. In my administrative role, emails are a constant, and a clear, concise email is an art form.
Boy, yes.
also other kinds of memos and departmental and university documents. And very often, those are collaboratively written.
Right.
A big part of my job is my scholarly work, and that writing tends to happen in spurts, kind of at the moments. You know, I'm researching all the time, and then I have banks of time when I can really write.
Yeah.
It varies a lot, but writing is a constant in my work.
And just to sort of interject a little bit in the middle of this, as I want to do as host. those you described very different kinds of writings. Like you said, you know, writing the concise, informative email is an art form. Writing a memo, you know, is an art form. Each of these things requires that you sort of shift gears a little bit, mm-hmm. because you have to recognize how your audience is receiving the information, how much time they're going to have to read it, what you actually want them to get out of your email,
right.
you know, whether it's just a quick, you know, notice of something or whether you want them to stop and pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so all of those kinds of things. And so, yeah, anyway,
of course, those are all examples of where critical thinking is applied, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you think about your audience in that way,
yeah, right.
you're obviously applying that skill.
Yeah, and literally, you know, like as we're doing this show, as I said, it was like this isn't the typical interview for my show. So the whole time that we are talking and you are responding to questions or, you know, we're doing this, I'm, you know, thinking about the next question or constantly how to reconnect it to this, to social justice and how to inform people. So, okay. So then the third question, in what ways are oral presentation skills important in your field?
You know, it's funny. Oral presentation, like public speaking, is still a challenge for me. I've learned that I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I do it quite a bit. I'll be doing some tomorrow. I'm doing some today, I guess.
You are, yes.
I still admire somebody who really does it well, you know, who can really not only be informed and articulate and fluent, but also authentic and impassioned. It's hard for me to get all those right at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, usually you find that the more connected you are to what you're talking about, the easier it is to do that, to sort of become the storyteller or the orator,
mm-hmm.
you know, of that particular topic.
Yeah. But, so obviously I present to students, although part of what taught me that I could teach is understanding that being the presenter was less of my job as a teacher than being a facilitator.
Oh, yeah.
And that is actually a skill that I wish had been taught more explicitly in my undergraduate career,
mm-hmm.
that the role of drawing others out and perhaps kind of scaffolding a conversation in a way that many contributions to it can contribute to some ultimate kinds of meanings.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So that facilitation skill. And I also present to my colleagues, both within the university setting here at VCU and also beyond that at conferences, et cetera. So
right.
Lots of ways.
Yeah, sure. When you are thinking about not just the oral presentations and your dialogue with your colleagues, I think that's something to go into too. Let me back up. My real thought there mm-hmm. had to do with this idea of drawing students out,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering. I'm not sure how long you've been teaching, but over those years, have you seen either an increase in student self-confidence? Or a decrease in terms of the need to be able to draw them out. I think about when I was, you know, really young and in school and sort of the remnants of the old school way of doing things, which was very sort of dictatorial and authoritarian. And you raised your hand to answer a question and you only spoke when you were spoken to.
And I wish that were old school. I fear... I fear that it is still very much the norm in many places.
Yes. Well, okay, well then good, because then we've got side-by-side laboratories, right?
Sure.
So for some people, that kind of dynamic will, you know, maybe will bring them out, will help them develop the skill to sort of push themselves forward and make them come out, and if they're going to, you know, really engage the topic. But for other people, it's just going to, like, shove them absolutely out and down, and they will not engage. And in a classroom where they might otherwise do really well because they may actually have been interested in the subject, suddenly they're like, I don't care, this doesn't matter,
mm-hmm.
whatever. And so I'm just sort of wondering that as you know, something like this has evolved, is it because you're really finding, you know, is there, I think I'm just sort of wondering if in a generalized way, are students
ready?
Yeah.
Ready.
Maybe that's really just it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say it varies. And it varies in part on personality, of course. Of course, there are still some students that are just shyer.
Mm-hmm.
But it also varies according to what they have become accustomed to in their other school career, in the mm-hmm. rest of their school career proceeding. You know, these are first-year students, so they're fresh out of high school, and very often they have been lectured at.
Right.
Because the schools have to teach, you know, and I admire high school teachers tremendously, but of course they have had to teach to a test that expects right answers.
That's right.
Right. So, how they've done that, how their high school teachers have done that, and their parents and their other influential adults varies a lot from student to student. So their readiness to participate in class discussion varies widely.
Right.
And teaching that it is a skill to participate
mm-hmm.
and that, in fact, we need to hear from everybody in the room.
Yeah.
I've developed a kind of, a cache of tools to help facilitate participation by every student.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also remember that it's important for me to remember that the quiet students very often are really engaged.
Yeah.
Sometimes what can happen is that I can suggest that other students at their table, in my classrooms they tend to sit around smaller tables or in small groups.
Right.
One of the other students can say, I can encourage one of the other students who's more vocal to say, okay, if somebody at your table has a really good idea, share it for them and give them credit or encourage them to share it.
Mm-hmm.
I
think that's a really important, that is a really important dynamic. I think I see even in, frankly, organizing,
mm-hmm.
Because it is a collaborative process to work together. People come to activism or political engagement for various reasons, and most people are not confident about either writing or speaking,
mm-hmm.
and yet this is an arena in which it's so important to communicate clearly and effectively, but. At the very least, you know, passionately and even stumblingly, but
mm-hmm.
you know, just to and so we actually are finding that in that process, people do develop and grow. You know, every time you make them do a rally or make them, you know, hand out a flyer and talk to people or something, you begin to get more confidence about your ability to do that and say things like, yes, I have the information right here, or,
yes.
Wow, I have no idea. I guess I better go find out and
right.
I'll get back to you.
right. And I teach from a social justice perspective in my classroom, but the thing that I try to remember, I think it was maybe Bell Hooks who said, it's important to remember that education itself is empowerment, right? It's
that's
the
right.
kind of the first level of empowerment, right?
Right.
And so that's first, the content, but also the process is really important. So, and our students need to be kind of sensitized to the fact that there is a process, right?
Right.
And
it's okay for them to be in development with
right,
it.
Right, right, exactly. Yes, and also that they're not in charge of the process, and in fact, I am not in charge of the process in many cases, in many ways. But they are also not free to disengage.
Uh-huh, right.
right.
We bring the authoritarian piece back in. While you are here, and you know that.
I mean, of course, ultimately they are free to disengage, right?
Yeah. And, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Students can ultimately say they will often say something along the lines of, "Do I have to do this?"
Right.
And I say, "No, you don't have to be in college at all."
Right.
Right.
So first, you establish your paradigm, your context, and then from there, decisions have to be made.
Right. Right.
Okay. So they're giving me the high five, or a high two, actually, at this point. So first, I'm going to get out of the way. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for having me.
And how would people learn more, or would you want people to contact you, being a sequestered ivory tower professor type?
First, the VCU website, www.vcu.edu. Focused inquiry is the search term, or you can find it under the alphabetical listing. My email is available as a public servant online. It is mlshel Sheldon. That's M.L. Sheldon with a D-E-N at the end.
Good.
At vcu.edu.
Okay, very good. Yeah, so I encourage my listeners very much to push on Mary's telephone buttons and and go to that website because it's. I think it could even be partly the land where people are frightened of college. But also helping people just decide and when and what to approach in terms of college study and what it's going to mean for their, you know, and the idea that you're actually going to develop critical thinking skills, that that's actually going to be what you graduate with, is the ability to carry that forward, you know, with a certain body of knowledge that you are then prepared to expand upon.
I think
it's very exciting.
And VCU, if you are in the land of is college right for me, I think VCU is a wonderful school to consider. Because it is absolutely a school of opportunity.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Mary, for being on the show.
Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in today. Very quickly, I'll just remind you about the press conference that's going on in front of the Patrick Henry Building, 1111 East Broad Street, on behalf of Neely Latson, who is in prison for an altercation with a police officer that resulted in a wrong conviction because of the circumstances being entirely wrong. So check that out on Facebook, and I look forward to talking to each and every one of you next week, where we will be covering the issue of the national census being conducted in Mauritania. This is back to our Africa series and the issues of discrimination in government policy. So I look forward to talking to you then, and thank you for tuning in. Remind you to keep up the struggle and that kindness matters, and you can use that as a tool as well. Thanks for tuning in. See you next week.